13. "Put my bag in the front bedroom, Calpurnia," was the first thing Aunt Alexandra said. "Jean Louise, stop scratching your head," was the second thing she said. Calpurnia picked up Auntie's heavy suitcase and opened the door. "I'll take it," said Jim, and took it. I heard the suitcase hit the bedroom floor with a thump. The sound had a dull permanence about it. "Have you come for a visit, Auntie?" I asked. Aunt Alexander's visits from the landing were rare, and she traveled in state. She owned a bright green square Buick and a black chauffeur, both kept in an unhealthy state of tidiness, but today they were nowhere to be seen. "Didn't your father tell you?" she asked. Jim and I shook our heads. "Probably he forgot. He's not in yet, is he?" "No'm, he doesn't usually get back till late afternoon," said Jim. "Well, your father and I decided it was time I came to stay with you for a while." For a while in Macomb meant anything from 3 days to 30 years. Jim and I exchanged glances. "Jim's growing up now, and you are too," she said to me. "We decided that it would be best for you to have some feminine influence." "It won't be many years, Jean Louise, before you become interested in clothes and boys." I could have made several answers to this. "Cal's a girl. It would be many years before I would be interested in boys. I would never be interested in clothes." But I kept quiet. "What about Uncle Jimmy?" asked Jim. "Is he coming too?" "Oh, no, he's staying at the landing. He'll keep the place going." The moment I said, "Won't you miss him?" I realized that this was not a tactful question. Uncle Jimmy present or Uncle Jimmy absent made not much difference. He never said anything. Aunt Alexandra ignored my question. I could think of nothing else to say to her. In fact, I could never think of anything to say to her, and I sat thinking of past painful conversations between us. "How are you, Jean Louise?" "Fine, thank you, ma'am. How are you?" "Very well, thank you. What have you been doing with yourself?" "Nothing." "Don't you do anything?" "No'm." "Certainly you have friends." "Yes'm." "Well, what do you all do?" "Nothing." It was plain that Auntie thought me dull in the extreme, because I once heard her tell Atticus that I was sluggish. There was a story behind all this, but I had no desire to extract it from her then. Today was Sunday, and Aunt Alexandra was positively irritable on the Lord's Day. I guess it was her Sunday corset. She was not fat, but solid, and she chose protective garments that drew up her bosom to giddy heights, pinched in her waist, flared out her rear, and managed to suggest that Aunt Alexandra's was once an hourglass figure. From any angle, it was formidable. The remainder of the afternoon went by in the gentle gloom that descends when relatives appear, but was dispelled when we heard a car turn in the driveway. It was Atticus, home from Montgomery. Jim, forgetting his dignity, ran with me to meet him. Jim seized his briefcase and bag. I jumped into his arms, felt his vague, dry kiss, and said, "Did you bring me a book? Did you know Auntie's here?" Atticus answered both questions in the affirmative. "How'd you like for her to come live with us?" I said I would like it very much, which was a lie, but one must lie under certain circumstances and at all times when one can't do anything about them. "We felt it was time you children needed." "Well, it's like this, Scout," Atticus said. "Your aunt's doing me a favor as well as you all. I can't stay here all day with you, and the summer's going to be a hot one." "Yes, sir," I said, not understanding a word he said. I had an idea, however, that Aunt Alexandra's appearance on the scene was not so much Atticus's doing as hers. Auntie had a way of declaring what is best for the family, and I suppose her coming to live with us was in that category. Makem welcomed her. Miss Maudie Atkinson baked a lane cake so loaded with shinny it made me tight. Miss Stephanie Crawford had long visits with Aunt Alexandra, consisting mostly of Miss Stephanie shaking her head and saying, mm-mm-mm. Miss Rachel next door had Auntie over for coffee in the afternoons, and Mr. Nathan Radley went so far as to come up in the front yard and say he was glad to see her. When she settled in with us and life resumed its daily pace, Aunt Alexandra seemed as if she had always lived with us. Her missionary society refreshments added to her reputation as a hostess. She did not permit Calpurnia to make the delicacies required to sustain the society through long reports on Rice Christians. She joined and became secretary of the Makem Amanuensis Club. To all parties present and participating in the life of the county, Aunt Alexandra was one of the last of her kind. She had riverboat, boarding school manners. Let any moral come along, and she would uphold it. She was born in the objective case. She was an incurable gossip. When Aunt Alexandra went to school, self-doubt could not be found in any textbook, so she knew not its meaning. She was never bored, and given the slightest chance, she would exercise her royal prerogative. She would arrange, advise, caution, and warn. She never let a chance escape her to point out the shortcomings of other tribal groups to the greater glory of her own, a habit that amused Jim rather than annoyed him. Auntie better watch how she talks. Scratch most folks and make 'em, and they're kin to us. Aunt Alexandra, in underlining the moral of young Sam Merriweather's suicide, said it was caused by a morbid streak in the family. Let a 16-year-old girl giggle in the choir, and Auntie would say, "It just goes to show you, all the Penfield women are flighty." Everybody in Makem, it seemed, had a streak, a drinking streak, a gambling streak, a mean streak, a funny streak. Once, when Auntie assured us that Miss Stephanie Crawford's tendency to mind other people's business was hereditary, Atticus said, "Sister, when you stop to think about it, our generation's practically the first in the Finch family not to marry its cousins. Would you say the Finches have an incestuous streak?" Auntie said, "No, that's where we got our small hands and feet." I never understood her preoccupation with heredity. Somewhere, I had received the impression that fine folks were people who did the best they could with the sense they had, but Aunt Alexandra was of the opinion, obliquely expressed, that the longer a family had been squatting on one patch of land, the finer it was. "That makes the Yules fine folks, then," said Jim. The tribe of which Burris Yule and his brethren consisted had lived on the same plot of earth behind the Makem dump and had thrived on county welfare money for three generations.